Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Always great to have the leading firm of its kind right here on Long Island. And it's fine, CEO and president in place, one of my good friends. And our favorite guest, his name is Richard Heumann, and leads the way of the great H2M Architects and Engineers. This is a company, by the way, that offers so much, 450 or so employees, architects, engineers, planners, designers, inspectors, surveyors, scientists, probably other things as too. Other things too I'm not mentioning, but it's always the aforementioned Mr. Heumann. Always great to get him in house.
It is great to be here with you again, Jay. And just a smile on your face is enough to start my morning really, really well. I'm excited to be here, man.
Well, I'm excited because the Mets finally lost. And I know you're a big fan, but no, all kidding aside, that was a great run you had. What, 15-2 against Triple A teams? You know what? I think my Little League baseball team that I coached could take out the Padres, the White Sox, and the Pirates. So please. But you know what? You ran into a wall last night with the great Braves and Ronald Acuña Jr. in Hotlanta last night. But you know what? You're right in the mix. I get it. I give you credit. Mickey Callaway got it. Well, I should say the Mets got their way back into the playoff picture.
You know, it's really unfortunate that you look to step on us. We're on our way up, and you're stepping on us. Thank God for the Orioles, right, you Yankee fans?
Isn't it great to have double-A baseball back in MLB? Oh, it's so great from yesterday. I remember those double-A. I mean, how bad are the I only see, like, one guy, that guy Santander. Am I pronouncing it right? Santander. Who was in left field. He's a player. He really is a player. I don't know about the – that's a tough boy, you know, you talk – Rich, Oriole tradition. What has happened to the – remember the old days? Frank Robinson, Boog Powell, Dave McNally, Jim Palmer, Mike Cuellar. What has happened to – Buck Showalter, where are you? That's why he left. Yeah. What has happened to these Oriole teams?
I know.
How do you put a team like that on the field?
Well, you know what? When you look at them playing against the Yankees, are just a – they're a – bloody juggernaut. I mean, you know, batter after batter after batter, and it doesn't matter who's up. I mean, I think didn't in yesterday's game didn't wasn't there a leadoff home run?
DJ LeMahieu.
I mean, forget about it.
MVP of the league.
Forget about it. He's killing it.
Even Aaron Judge woke up later. I had to like rub my eyes. That Judge who had a 2-run double.
That's scary.
I mean, he hasn't hit a lick.
That's scary, right? Stanton's doing nothing. Judge has been.
Stanton's collecting the $35 million right now. Yeah, you know, he doesn't need. What do you have to get back in the field for when you're collecting that guarantee?
There's no rush, and it's still winning. So,
but listen, you're in the mix. Good, yeah. You're not out of it.
Thank you.
Baseball is meaningful.
Thank you.
To you and others. So that's a good thing. And by the way, you and I were talking. You know, it's what today is August the 14th, and this summer has flown by. Now, I'll tell you, you know how the summer has flown by? You walk in the stores and you're seeing witches and goblins and pumpkins. And I mean, can we take a break? And, you know, Halloween is 10 weeks away. I mean, what's the Christmas trees will be out. I mean, come on. I can't take this anymore.
It's a capitalistic world, and we're living in it, Jay. I know.
It's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
You having a good summer, though?
Summer's been great. Personally great. Went down to Florida.
Yeah.
Key West with the family.
It was freaking hot. You like
hot.
Key West? It was nice.
Hot. It was great. We had a great time. When the pool is 98 degrees, there's no relief. But we had a blast of Wall Street and, you know, the restaurants and the pubs and the
nothing
shopping.
Like
and
nothing like it. Does the heat get to you down there? Because, you know, it's triple digits. But I like it.
Well, you notice there's even good. You're walking around at 10 o'clock at night and it's still, you know, 88 degrees, 90% humidity.
Yeah.
You're dripping. Walking around and, you know, still looking for a couple, you know, I'll go into a CVS and shop just for the AC.
Yeah, no, it's really, it's bad.
It was good to get away. You know, always good to get away, recharge a little bit, but, you know, business-wise, summer's been great. The year has been, you know, we talked last time.
Yeah.
It's been really good for us and still hiring a boatload of people and growing a lot and working on a lot of great projects and continue to be good.
Yeah, you're always, I'm reading about H2M. You guys are building like crazy. You're doing a great job and everything else. And that, you know, you point to different economics here and there, but you guys keep rolling along, right?
Yeah, yeah.
As far as building an infrastructure, that's a good thing. Rich Heumann is with us, H2M Architects and Engineers, leading firm of its kind, folks. We've been telling you about that. And also, you know, we talk about your great company, 86 years, by the way, in business. And the hiring process never stops. You know, one thing about you, you are, and as we always say, you continue to grow the brand. You always look for that next superstar out there, whether it be a college grad or, you know, just a professional who's been out there and needs a job and whatnot. But, you know, you're always recruiting. You're always looking for folks to kind of add to the lineup, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's a good thing. That's,
yeah, it's you know, we talk about all, we've talked about it for years, you know, the you know, the challenge to growth is to continue to find good people. You know, especially when the economy is good, it's more challenging to do it. And yeah. And you've got to almost continuously reinvent your approach and your strategy to recruiting people. And we do that, you know, and I think the success is in the results, you know, where I think when I talked to my HR director, you know, end of last week, we're up to hiring 80 new people this year. We'll probably end the year hiring 100 new people.
Wow. How many companies do that?
And it's spread out in all of our offices, you know, in the Northeast region, which is great. So, you know, the growth isn't just Long Island growth. We're growing within the region.
Yep.
But you know what? It's we have so many good people that are working really hard to create opportunities in the company and to cause the growth to happen that allows us to be in a position to hire new people. And, you know, if the other leaders in the firm weren't, you know, driven to grow and driven to be successful and driven to do good work for our clients, then we wouldn't have as many opportunities to hire new people. And with that, you get the opportunities to allow current employees to rise up through the organization.
Yeah.
To me, that's, you know, my philosophy from the beginning has been, you know, when you're growing and creating opportunities, you give career paths for existing employees to be successful. And to me, you know, anytime I see, you know, an employee that's been with us for 15 years get promoted to a really strong management position, I'm thrilled by that. You know, that to me is the ultimate statement of what your firm is all about. If you can have people that have been working for you for a long time be able to continue to grow, get promoted, get new responsibilities, be more successful, you know, that's sustainable. And that I think that's one of the reasons why we're as strong as we are.
Big time. No question. H2M.com, by the way, /careers. Check out all the opportunities. Plenty of them. Now, tariff wars continuing left and right. You've now sort of a little bit of easement as far as the pushback date. I think it's December 15th now. Tensions exist. You know, it's interesting. Anytime you mention the word tariff on Wall Street, you can go either way, right?
Yeah.
You saw the slip 382 and then an increase 300 plus yesterday. How does that affect you guys? You know, obviously building materials, everything else could be. Is that something in the back of your mind as you lead the way of this company? You know, is that something to keep an eye on? Costs, obviously very important, right?
Always, always. I mean, you know, when you're in the business of designing and building infrastructure and buildings and you're working with clients who are always going to be concerned about their funding and their budgets and their priorities, you need to stay on top of it and be able to recognize what the cost impact is going to be to the work that you're doing. Yeah. So for us, you know, we have internal processes in place where we've got people who specialize in the construction aspects of what we do.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're constantly evaluating, you know, recent bids. They're evaluating whatever's, you know, published in construction literature about, you know, where's the price of steel, where's the price of wood, where's the price of plastics, you know, so that at least we can be in a position to be able to do the best job we can in estimating work for our clients. You know, no client wants to, you know, put a job out and have it come in, you know, 30-40% more than what the engineer estimated it to be. So, you know, we pay close attention to it. You know, the good news to me is that it hasn't slowed down the demand to continue to do big projects. And I think that was one of the big fears early on. Yeah. Was that, you know, the economic development was going to start to slow. We haven't seen that.
See, that's interesting. because, you know, we talk about some of the economic woes and everything else that take. But, you know, you look at Wall Street, I mean, streamlining still. Bad day, good day, kind of a wash the last couple. You know, you're still over 26,000 as far as Wall Street on the Dow and everything else. You know, you look at everything, it's very positive. What about this latest thing? Because it's very much under the radar. And I had some folks on last week, this whole thing with National Grid and the pipeline and everything else. Has that hurt you guys? Has it slowed down the essence of natural gas, the pipeline that is kind of halted right now? Because, you know, moratorium,
yeah,
a second one, and a lot of people are complaining. And certainly, you know, when it comes to building and construction, that is the essence of it all. What about that aspect?
What I've seen is not a major slowdown, but I've seen a lot of anxiety as a result of it because
people are very worried on this.
Worried. Well, you've got, you know, people that have had commitments and have planned based on the commitments, and some people are in the process of initiating projects and, you know, getting notified from National Grid that, you know, we're not in a position to be able to provide gas for you. And to me, you know, when you consider the alternatives, right? So if you want projects to proceed, if you're not going to be using natural gas for fuel, you know, fuel oil is an alternative. And, you know, other fossil fuels, the way we exist today, are an alternative. I think the broader look to trying to get off of fossil fuels, I understand it, and you know there's a lot
especially
of benefits
climate
to that.
Change and everything else that everybody's worth,
there's a lot of benefits to that, but it's got to be properly planned. You know, you can't just stop. You need to have transition, and right now there's not enough other forms of energy in place to be able to transition. So, you know, to me, I think it's very short-sighted to cause a lot of the big developments we're talking about to be at risk. Well, you know, what you talk with the government about Belmont, you know, Belmont is going to be a project. It's going to be a, you know, huge gas demand there, and everything you're doing at the hub and, you know, all these major projects, a lot of the projects out here in Suffolk County are going to be relying on gas. And, you know, as of today, with the moratorium, you've got major developers who are
wondering which way they're going to go.
Yeah, I mean, they don't know.
It's an expensive game of chicken right now when you think about it, because, you know, I look at the ratepayer out there. I mean, they're going to be paying more. You know, I mean, at this point in time, we know the gas is cheaper. We get it. But you wonder how the cost will factor into those who are economically challenged. And, you know, we talk about the green energy deal and everything else. Well, what's going to happen to that with emissions and everything, you know, going CO2 and everything? You're going to have an increased level of that going into the air. In essence, you know, you wonder, is this beneficial at this point in time? A lot of factors involved here.
Yeah, to me, I mean, anytime you're considering something like this, there's you need to provide alternative. If not this, then what's my alternative? And if there is no alternative to natural gas, well, then things just stop.
Right.
And that, to me, is completely counter to what you've seen coming from the state, what you've seen coming from the counties, that, you know, there's so much support for economic development and for growth. So if this moratorium doesn't get lifted and there's no alternative, guess what? It stops. So I think the opportunities are there for, you know, stakeholders to get together and understand what the relative impacts are and to come up again with an approach to this where, okay, it's measured, it's planned. Yes, we need to make this commitment and we know that we want to be able to, get ourselves, less dependent on fossil fuels and more dependent on renewables. And again, you know, for the future, I completely support that. And,
yeah,
and that's something that needs to happen. You know, at the same time, you know, you need to get wind farms to go. You need to get solar fields to go. And if those things can't go and natural gas isn't going to go and people don't want fossil fuels to go,
where are you at?
Where are you at?
That's really what it comes down to, because, you know, you look at the three majors. Yeah, you know, okay, Belmont, everything approved, ready to go. How will that turn out? We'll see. You know, you still got Ronkonkoma Hub. You still have the Heartland Project, right? And then the Nassau Hub by the new Coliseum there. So you wonder how this will kind of play into the equation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because those three pieces right there, besides Belmont, are as important to Long Island than anything else in the next couple of decades.
Yeah.
So right now, you know, you're kind of caught in the middle here.
And I've got to believe that, you know, anything I've read about it, whatever the environmental concerns are, there's ways to mitigate them. I'm sure there's going to be a balance that's going to be found in there one way or another. And I know that the developer of the gas line is you know, very active in being responsive to New York and New Jersey with regard to what their environmental concerns are. And, you know, you check the boxes you have to check to make sure that you're diligent in being protective of the environment, and then you move it forward. Yeah. You know, you can't stop it. It needs to move forward.
No question. Rich Heumann and folks you're listening to, President and CEO of the great H2M Architects and Engineers, leading firm of his kind, they're based right out of Melville, Broad Hollow Road. Now, you're part of that great HIA, and anything new coming out as far as what's happening in the hot bog and the industrial, as far as anything we need to know?
Yeah, I think there's you know, lots of new stuff. There's a whole rebranding that is going on right now, which is fantastic. I think, you know, talking about the Long Island Innovation Park at Hot Bog strategically was a very important step.
Yeah.
And HIA was a leader in that. And it really reflects what we feel as the overall benefit in you know, the economic value that you get at the, you know, at the park and all the businesses and all the employees that work there. So to me, really important first step. I think that the continued engagement with elected officials is fantastic. You know, Terry and Joe have been doing a great job in driving that. They're very visible and making sure that they're going in and, you know, meeting with elected officials, meeting with, you know, there was, I think the Long Island Regional Planning Council came out supportive of you know, projects that we're looking to do with regard to you know, employment centers and, you know, looking to create, you know, a true hub of you know, not just you know, businesses and innovation from a Long Island perspective, but also you know, really putting our feet in and saying, look, if we're going to be committed to this, then we need to be able to provide resources that allow for development of, you know, future workers that we know the business in the park are going to need in order to grow. So it's no moss growing on this group. I mean, the group is just moving.
And it's good to see, you know, listen, years ago, we always used to talk with you, Joe, the fact that politicians locally didn't embrace the HIA, you know, they didn't do it properly. Yeah, they recognize it, but they didn't embrace it the way they should have. You know, you look what's happening in Silicon Valley. We don't listen. Silicon Valley and what's out here, those are two economic engines right there that drive growth. And you'd think, you know, years ago you would get a better response, but it's good to see. At least I get a sense that people that are in the position of leading are finally putting their arms around this thing, because listen, if they don't recognize it, you know, we're in trouble here. You need them.
You need them. You need them. And I think the approach that HIA took in getting them engaged was absolutely the right approach. It wasn't, you know, let's meet and complain. It was, you know, we're going to create the value proposition, and we are going to educate you, and we are going to give you what you need to get us onto your agenda.
Yeah.
And, you know, at all levels of government, I think they all recognize the, you know, the value, the potential, the importance. So all good, and I think there's going to be a lot more, you know, coming up.
Fantastic stuff. We got a lot more to discuss. CEO, the president's here, folks. H2M, architects and engineers. All right, we are back. Mr. Rich Heumann is with us. He is the fine president and CEO of H2M Architects and Engineers. You wonder what kind of company or firm is this? Well, they've been around a long time, 86 years. 1933. I always say that was a year. I believe Gone with the Wind came out. Was it Gone with the Wind or The Wizard of Oz?
I think we beat Gone with the Wind and The Wizard of Oz.
I think
we beat them.
The inaugural, and the company's still been around, right in Melville. 450 or so employees, surveyors, scientists, designers, architects, engineers, you name it. This is the man who leads. I ask him the question all the time. You know, he took over the reins. And and the pressures and everything else. You know, listen, 86 years is nothing to sneeze at. I mean, no. You pinch yourself on a daily basis, monthly basis, saying, you know what, I'm leading a company that existed right after the Great Depression and everything else. And, you know, you've been through it all, market crash in 08, still there and everything else, and still going strong. You ever kind of reminisce and think back and of what it all means? It's a pretty good accomplishment, I think.
Often. You know? Often I do, and I feel the responsibility completely, but I love what I do. Yeah.
You really do, though. I mean, it's like, you know, some guys and gals, you know, I like it. But you really, because you exude, you know, I see it in your face, the smile. But every time I bring it up, but you really have that passion and everything else that, you know, you don't find in a lot of CEOs. You know, CEOs are kind of serious, go through the motions, but you really like daily activity, what happens. Am I right with that?
My favorite part of the day is walking through the office and talking to people. Really is my favorite part of the day. And, you know, when I see somebody.
You're a hands-on guy. You go around, you say hi to different
people. You know what? I wish I had more time to do it. Yeah. You know, there's lots of responsibilities. But to me, making sure I'm driving the right kind of culture in the organization is probably the most important thing. Making sure the employees are happy and smiling. I've got a bunch of running things that I talk to employees about, but one of them is, you know, you don't need to be happy and smiling every day, but you have to be happy and smiling most days. We always have a bad day here and there, and that's fine. But the amount of positive effect you can have on your group when you're happy and you're smiling is significant. Yeah. And, you know, by the same tone, if you're not smiling and not happy, you know, you're gonna drag the team down. And if you're too often unhappy, let me know, because you probably need to find something else to do.
Do people confide in you? I mean, you have so much out there, you know, with harassment laws and everything else. You got to be careful. We know. But, I mean, obviously you're privy to that, right? It's sensitivity and everything else. Do you guys conduct any training in that regard as far as sensitivity issues these days? It's the new day and age, right?
No, we do. I mean, there's mandatory training that we do. And, you know, the state.
And you take it very seriously.
Yeah, obviously. Well, you have to. Yeah. And we make sure that we've got various pathways for employees to talk to people. You know, you want to hope that every employee will have a strong relationship with his or her supervisor. That's really where the majority of the interaction is going to happen. And to me, first-line supervisors are going to have the greatest effect of whether or not an employee is successful and is happy and is satisfied and all those things. But, you know, they can go to HR. They could go, you know, we have a mentoring buddy program where when new employees start, we also connect them with someone that's not in their group to kind of give them a sense of, you know, if they want to ask a question about the company that's not specific to the kind of work that they're doing, it's another outlet, it's another connection. The more connections you can create for employees, the greater chance you're going to have to keep them and to...
So you want people, to me, a happy employee is a productive employee, pretty much.
Absolutely.
Right? And that only adds to the company, overall company.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So it's important stuff.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. So there's a connection. People are feeling good and everything else. I like the fact you're talking to people. People can find your door's always open, right?
Doors open, but you know, it's funny where
you don't have to make an appointment with you.
No, nobody has to make an appointment. I think they feel like they do because people, every conversation starts with, you know, I know you're really busy, but, and then I need to kind of shut that down and say, you know, I'm never too busy. Whatever the issue is, you know, come in and we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I often forget what my role is.
Yeah.
And it's not easy for people just to come in and knock on the door and say, hey, can I talk? Because they view me a certain way. I don't view myself the way that they view me, but the reality is that that's how they view me. So I'll talk to, I mean, you know, Joyce, I'll talk to my assistant and kind of have her, you know, keep me on point and say, you know, hey, if I haven't, you know, walked around often enough, tell me. Or if you think I'm not giving people enough time, let me know. You know, I want to be open to that.
Sure.
And it's really easy to allow all the responsibilities to kind of consume you. But you've got to make sure that your priorities are what they are. And to me, the employees are always going to be my priority.
That's a top way of thinking. Mr. Heumann is with us, H2M. Now, you're one of the best in the business. I've always said this. You know, you do so many charitable things with the Habitat for Humanity. You work very closely, Special Olympics. You do a wonderful job of that. You're active, like LIA. We tell the folks that all the time. What's happening in those areas, if anything?
It's we talked about the summer going by quick. A lot of good things this summer. We were talking earlier that we had almost 100 employees and their friends support the H2M team at the Markham Workplace Challenge. It's the largest group that we ever had as a company, which is awesome. You know, and it just reinforces the commitment that the employees have to play their part in order to help our community. We've done a couple of builds. We have a CEO build coming up where I'll be participating with Suffolk Habitat. Looking forward to it. You know, I did one maybe 2 years ago, which was great. And, it's an awesome opportunity because, a lot of the leading companies on Long Island, the CEOs get together and, we do a build for a day. We're either, swinging hammers or putting up drywall or painting, or I have no idea what we're going to be doing. But, It's such a good way to bridge the engagement of leaders on Long Island, to have them go out and actually physically do the work. You can always write a check, and that's great because people need the money and people need the checks, and that's awesome. But to me, anything I'm involved in, I like to be personally involved in. Whether it's Habitat or the Inn or Special Olympics, where we've got we get a great group together to run in the Tunnel to Towers 5K, Steven Siller. Yep. So that's been growing. We probably get 70 or 75 H2Mers, and we meet at 5:30 in the morning at Chaminade, and we
really
drive buses in, and it's awesome. And we raise a lot of money. And that's something that has just been woven into the fabric of who we are. And I think another reason why, we continue to be successful in showing our employees that we want to be a best-in-class company, not just a company that, business is really important. And when you're a healthy business, you can afford to grow and you can afford to hire new people, and you have to be healthy financially. But you also need to be supportive in these other areas because I think the employees are looking for that.
You bring up a good point. I don't know if I've ever asked you this, but did you have a mentor kind of growing up? Is there somebody? Because you seem to have this mental know-how of not only dealing with people, companies, and everything else. You have a grasp on so many different areas. You have to. You got such a large company. But in essence, what about growing up? I mean, was there somebody that you kind of, put up there as far as, that's interesting. I asked this of Joe Kemp, and Joe always brings up Jack Welch, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And Jack was an amazing guy in the world of business. What about you? Was there somebody that you kind of looked upon that's, you were just captivated by, and thus, you've taken some of those types of tactics that one might have used and brought it into your own life here.
Yeah, I
don't know if I ever asked you that.
I start my old man all the time. The approach that I take to dealing with people and dealing with business is, you roll your sleeves up and you be committed and you be part of the team. And, he worked in the same job his whole life. My grandfather worked in the same job for his whole life. And H2M, besides my 11 to 7 a.m. shift at 7-Eleven when I was like 16 years old.
Wow,
delivering news days, H2M is my career. And, he was never about going someplace else because maybe the opportunity is better for me there. It was always about work hard where you are and make it better. And my whole life is kind of been like that. And really at H2M, I had Dennis Kelleher and John Malloy. John Malloy is our former CEO, and Dennis Kelleher is one of our executive vice presidents now. I worked my whole career for these two people. And just learned a tremendous amount in how to deal with people, how to deal with clients, how to deal with employees. You know, a funny thing about Dennis is we would always joke because he's got three daughters and his wife, and he's so committed to H2M and committed to his clients that you know, when you're out at meetings until 8 o'clock, you know, 4 days a week, you need to have a very understanding family. Because you're spending a lot of time and you know, you're looking to, you know, do things for yourself that are also going to be beneficial for your family.
Yeah.
And they would say to him, like, Dad, you have no clients. They're all your friends. And he, that's how he dealt with his clients. He was so reliable and somebody that, you know, every client knew if I was in a bind, I could call Dennis 24/7 and he's going to help me out of my bind. And it's the kind of relationship that goes way beyond a client, you know, professional relationship. You know, it's and I've made that also part of what I do. So I think I probably don't have a singular person.
Yeah,
I think you know, just being somebody who, you know, looks and wants to learn and wants to kind of take the best of what he sees in other people has, you know, kind of put the puzzle together for me.
Yeah, you mentioned communication. You know, I mean, that's what it is. You know, I think, you know, whatever industry you're in, the communication way of it is so important. You know, that two-way. I always say, you know, in broadcasting, obviously a two-way street, sales, whatever. But, you know, it's funny because my father, I look at my father as well. You know, my father was in the Garment Center. And, you know, I kind of looked upon him as just an amazing guy with the relationships that he forged and everything else. And I remember my entrance way, you know, I started out in sales. You know, I was one of these guys where, you know, I sold vacuum cleaners. Believe it or not, I tell the story all the time. People don't believe me. But I worked for, one of my first jobs was for Electrolux. I don't even know. Does Electrolux make a vacuum cleaner? I don't even know.
They did.
I know I bought one way back. And I had a guy come to my door, and we bought a vacuum cleaner. You know, it was like $500, whatever the heck. I felt bad for the guy. He was so good at it. But anyway, I worked for Electrolux, one of my first sales jobs. I probably was 15 or 16, I'm thinking. And the company was out of Great Neck, and I learned the business, and I took a canister of oatmeal. It's true, the oatmeal test, you know, you throw it out in the carpet and everything, and hopefully the vacuum, if not, you're going to be
in trouble.
But you know, I just remember the oatmeal test and selling my first vacuum cleaner. The biggest hazard in that job was Spot by the fence. You know, Spot the dog, you know, who would rip my head off, if, you know, because you're cold calling and everything. You don't have appointments in those days. But, you know, I learned a lot, you know, from my dad who, you know, built these relationships and kind of catapulted me into the communications business, which, you know, in sales. Yeah. Sales is all about communications.
Absolutely.
You know, it's two-way street, and you have to have, you know, it's like a partnership kind of, you know, and that's how I kind of, you know, carved my path and then got into broadcasting and everything else, but it kind of works hand in hand.
If you want to be in business for 86 years, that has to be your approach,
yeah.
Right? You got to communicate well, and you got to build really strong relationships. Our oldest client, we still have this client that we had in 1935.
Yeah.
So a client we had in 1935, we still have today.
How about that?
And, you know, we have lots of clients that we've had for 50 and 60 years because we're completely committed to the right kind of relationship, providing the right kind of service, communicating well. And I you know, continue to do what I can to drive that in the organization and make sure that everybody, you know, signs on to the same approach, you know, that it is about relationships and communication.
Yeah. There's no question. And one of the other things, and we always talk to, you know, supervisors and everything else here on the island, you know, it seems Prio One is affordable housing. You know, a lot of these guys and gals, they have that on the agenda as being one of the top situations. You know, you look what's happening in Patchogue, and Pontieri's done a great job. We know that. What about that aspect? Do you see that trend kind of continuing? Everybody's talking about, even out in East Hampton, Peter Van Skoy, it's all about affordable housing.
100%.
You know, you agree with that concept, right?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, for you know, decades, the perception of affordable housing, prevented Long Island from going ahead and starting to do some of these things because, you know, you had communities that, you know, everybody felt as though the dream should be, you know, a single family house on a half an acre somewhere. And, you know, affordable housing meant, you know, rental units you know, a different type of demographic coming into my community. And there's no way I'm going to support that. And elected officials didn't want to take that on. But, you know, the reality is it's extremely expensive to live here. So if the goal is to keep your people and to grow, well, then you need to provide opportunities for them to be able to afford to live here. Yeah. So, you know, whatever more work needs to be done in order to continue to move the needle on the perception of affordable housing has to continue, but strategically, it's the future of the island. Yeah. It has to be.
You have moved the needle as far as, you know, the hiring process. Listen, I always say, you know, it's great to have the affordable housing. You got to pay for it though. You know, you got to make sure those jobs are in place. You've done your part. I mean, are you happy? Obviously, we probably need to do a better job in moving that proverbial needle as far as making sure we have the right employment here. Keeping kids here. Everybody always says keeping these kids here are vital in the long run as far as economic growth and everything else on the island. You agree with that?
I agree. I mean,
gotta keep them here.
I think the opportunities are here for that.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful that the transition of you know housing and the strategy continues to move the way it's moving, and we do more of that. All the transit-oriented development that we're doing has to continue, and revitalizing and utilizing mass transit in a much more effective way than we've been doing it is important. And that's really what I think, you know, these next generations are looking for. They're not looking to you know be committed. Their plan isn't to in general, you know, hey, I want to be married by this age. I want to buy a house by this age. I want to, you know, that you take a look at our generation and we had our plans.
Yeah,
and
we did.
And
right,
that's how it went.
Yeah.
And the plans are different. So as a society, we need to be responsive to what their needs are. Otherwise, they're going to go because there's lots of places that are affording them the opportunities to be satisfied in what they're looking for. And you know, Long Island, I believe, is still behind the eight ball, but in the right direction. And we need to be able to continue to move ourselves at probably a greater rate than we are in order to I would say, mitigate people leaving. They're still going to leave, you know, but you want to be able to create the right kind of environment where they know they could be successful here, their careers can be here. They don't need to go and look someplace else because they're going to have everything they want right here.
Yeah, you're right. 100%. You know, listen, I got three millennials, you know, and I want to see a little more sense of urgency out of my three.
Yeah.
You know, I don't get that. Now, I don't know if that transpires into what everyone else is thinking, but I know mine, you know, the sense of urgency is when is dinner ready? You know, I mean, you know, what are we making for dinner? What are we having for dinner? Come on, you know. How about showing me a plan for the next day? You know, what is it that's going to make you – I always tell my kids this. They think I'm nuts. But, you know, it's always, you know, like, what are you going to do tomorrow to be productive? You know, it's not about how bad the grilled chicken will taste that I might make, you know? It's about a plan, an agenda to make you successful.
Yeah.
I don't get that, but maybe it'll happen. But you're right. You know, listen, you're encouraged by it. So hopefully that's going to come into place. Rich Human with us. A couple of minutes. Remain so. In summer's going good. Any travels for you this summer? I mean, you've been out and around.
Yeah, you know, doing a little bit of stuff. But I'm back. My kids are going back to school.
Yeah.
So now it's just funny how the dynamic changes when, you know, the summer starts.
Yeah.
You know, everything is. We've got this plan. We've got that plan. And by the time August comes around, you're like, I can't take it anymore. Let's, you know, we need to get back into, there's like a normalcy that happens when September comes around and school starts. But, you know, kids are good. I'm looking forward to a lot of, you know, continued growth. I'm looking forward to bringing new people in. I'm looking forward to a lot of the great projects that people are working on. planning for next year. Yeah. Right. I start in September. I start thinking about 2020.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be a huge year. Really.
So I'm looking forward to a really productive fall, really productive rest of the year, and you know, keeping us going on the same trend.
That is the key. And listen, I know you. You know, we talk baseball with the Mets. So we keep the fingers crossed. I know you're a big Jet fan, right?
Absolutely,
big Jet fan.
Absolutely.
And listen, you're
Sam Donald.
You are in good shape right now at 0-0.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think we'll ever. I don't think we're going to hear a lot. Same old Jets. I think. Listen, me. I think the Jets are going to have a good year. I like this Donald kid.
Yeah.
You know, this is a kid you got to watch. He's 22. You know, for some reason, crazy Adam Gase. You know, crazy Adam Gase, you know, with the eyes, and I tell you, something going on there, I don't know what it is. Crazy Adam Gase is going to lead the way for these Jets. Now, I might be wrong. I think they're going to have a pretty good year.
Yeah.
Now, you got Le'Veon Bell running the ball. You got a revamped offensive line. And I like what I'm seeing here with this Jet team, you know?
So you're not a Jet fan.
I'm a Giant fan.
All right. So just so you know. Cautiously optimistic. You never ever go into a season expecting anything with the Jets, right? If in October they're 4-2, I'm like, all right, I'm feeling pretty good about myself. When it comes to, you know, beginning of September, right. And
you're waiting for that shoe to drop.
Absolutely. You 1969 was 50 years ago.
I know.
50 freaking years ago.
You're right. You're right.
Super Bowl III seems like I was one. I was 1 year old. My father has Super Bowl III on, what is that, 8mm? So I can remember being like 7 and 8 years old, you know, with the white wall in my living room, and my father showing me the Jets beating the Colts in the Super Bowl. And, you know, for Joe Namath to still be my Jet hero 50 years later, I would have hoped there would have been another couple of Jets in there. Hey,
listen, they've come close. Sanchez years and Rex Ryan, championship games. You know, they've had been a couple of off years.
They need a Super Bowl.
But
for goodness sake.
You guys got to take out those Patriots, please. I can't stand those Patriots. Get those Patriots out of here.
I know.
You know, listen, we'll see. Tom Brady's 57, okay? Enough of I'm tired of Brady. Brady's still taking snaps and and listen, anybody that Belichick inserts in that lineup, they're making them an all-pro. I can't take it anymore with the Patriots. I'm tired of the Patriots. But with that being said, my Giants, tough times. Eli Manning, final year. We'll see.
I think the Giants are going to have a good year.
I'm not happy with the coach nor the GM, Mr. Gettleman. Maybe I'm wrong. We'll see.
They're going to have a good year.
I'm hoping. Listen, fantastic.
Yeah, it was great to be here. Yeah.
Always, man.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Keep up the good work.
Thanks.
With what you're doing. The great Rich Human, ladies and gents, from the great company, really one of the more fantastic of companies in existence, 86 years and counting, the great H2M Architects and Engineers. And we'll see him again, by the way, in September when we'll have a better feel for those New York Jets. Gangrene. See how they got to. Don't forget that opening game is going to be a good one with the Browns on Monday night.
Yeah.
Opening game.